Welcome to Beyond the Chutes, is presented by Parasite Systems. I'm your host today, Doug Simcox, and I am back in the recording studio in Taylorsville, Kentucky, just outside of Louisville. It's a gorgeous, beautiful day. It's cooler now, not as hot as it was yesterday, not as humid as what it has been, and the grass is green. I should say the blue grass is green because we are in the Kentucky state, and we are deep in the rodeo season, and there are so many rodeos for these. There are so many rodeos to get to. We appreciate you including us in your travels on these long runs, overnight runs, through all kinds of weather, all kinds of traffic. Just imagine us sitting in your passenger seat. Our job is to keep you entertained and awake. We'll do the talking. So be safe, eyes up, and if you are driving a big rig, as Robbie Hodges, a rodeo entertainer, calls it, 65 feet of rolling death, make sure you get plenty of braking distance. Back off and slow down when you need to. And we hope that this episode will help the miles pass just a little bit easier as you roll through the night. Today we have as a very, very special guest, Mr. Randy Steffens. He is currently living in Hyco, Texas. Randy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Doug. Glad to be here.
Great to have you on with us. And we're going to start where we always start, Randy. Let's go back as far as you can remember. Share whatever stories of grandparents or parents. Just give us a little bit about where you grew up and some of your memories.
Well, I was born in Lake Forest, Illinois, and raised there till I got married in 1969 to Marilee. And we stayed in Illinois and moved to Richmond, Illinois, and were there for 43 years. And I was a horseshoer for 53 years, retired and moved to Texas to be by my son and his and the grandkids. And that's where we stand right now. We're living in Hyco, Texas.
Hyco, Texas. So talk a little bit about Lake Forest. How would you describe it?
Oh, Lake Forest is really a beautiful town. It's right on Lake Michigan. I mean, it's just right there, and there's lots of trees. That's why they call it Lake Forest. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful town. They keep it up just pristine. It's really a nice place to be raised up in.
Very nice. And talk a little bit about parents, grandparents, anyone else that comes to mind.
Well, my mom and dad, they didn't have anything to do with rodeos or horses or anything. They just were just regular mom and dad. And then they bought me a horse when I was 12 years old, and that's when it all started.
And why did they buy you a horse, Randy?
Well, there was a horse in the paper for sale in the local paper. I just begged them and begged them and begged them. They bought me the horse, and that's what went on from there. I just kept getting better and better at horses.
Yeah. So you lived on a small place. You were able to keep the horse at the house?
No, we kept it at the neighbors. The neighbors had a horse, and they let me keep it there, and well, I took care of their horse, and it worked out pretty good.
Oh, excellent. So trail riding, horse showing, what were you doing at 12 years of age?
Oh, I was just riding my horse all over the – nobody else had horses in Lake Forest. And I was one of the few, and I just rode my horse all over Lake Forest, and everybody knew me by the kid on the horse, you know. Yeah, it went on from there. I started getting better horses and started the rodeo, and just went on and on and on, and had a good life of rodeoing, you know.
How did you find rodeo? Who introduced you to it?
Well, when I was a kid, my dad would take me to the county fair every year to watch the rodeo. And I said, one day I'm going to ride in a rodeo. And so when I got to be 15, I lied about my age and I entered the bareback riding at Grays Lake, Illinois, and I got killed off in it. And I said, I know I can do this. And so I kept after it. And I ended up riding saddle bronc and bulldogging for quite a few years. And ended up started picking up for Mito Calcevera, and then went on, picked up for Thero Ladding, and Steve Gannon of the World's Toughest Rodeo, and you know, just had a pretty good career rodeoing.
Yeah. And 15 years of age, I'm going to go back to that if I can. 15 years of age, and you'd watched it at a rodeo, at a fair, I should say, at a rodeo, said, I'm going to try that. Where'd you get the equipment? How did you even know how to even begin?
Oh, I went to a saddle shop and they were selling bareback riggins and bull ropes, and so I bought a bareback riggin, you know, for like $20. And that was the start of it.
Really, you bought it and then said, I'm going. So you entered up and you said, as you said, you got killed off. Describe to our listeners what it means to get killed off.
Well, I got on a bareback horse and never been on a bucking horse and fit 15 years old. And I mean, he bucked me off and drove my head in the ground and broke some ribs. And
Oh my gosh.
it wasn't very nice, but I liked it. I don't know. I said, this is what I want to do, you know?
You got up, broken ribs, limping out of the arena, and says, I want more of that.
Yep. And
That's
I got more of it. Got all I could handle.
got all you could handle. So you started on bareback. How long did you ride barebacks before you got into saddle broncs?
Oh, a couple of years. I wasn't very good at riding bareback horses.
No.
I really liked the saddle bronc riding.
What did you like about the bronc riding, saddle bronc riding?
I don't know. It was more like riding a horse with a saddle, you know. It just felt more comfortable. And
And who helped you get started in that?
really, nobody. I kept some horses around the house and I bucked them, you know, for practice, and that was about all I got going.
Okay.
Later on, I ended up going to Larry Mahan's rodeo school, which was a lot of help, you know.
And how old were you, and how hard were you going at this time?
Oh, we didn't go real hard. We, you know, I had to shoe horses during the week, and we went on weekends and went to quite a few rodeos, you know.
Yeah.
We worked a lot of the big rodeos. I picked up the IFR 7 times.
I see that. I see that. And when did you get into bulldogging?
Just about the same time I got into bronc riding.
Okay. And how did that go for you, Randy?
Pretty good. I was a pretty decent steer wrestler. You know, my son followed my footsteps, and he's really a good steer wrestler.
Oh, really?
He's still
Okay.
going.
He's still going. He's still competing.
Oh yeah, still competing.
Very nice. Very nice. And you mentioned the Calaveras, of course, Big Hat Rodeo up in Illinois. How did you get in to picking up? And how did you get into picking up for them?
Well, I didn't pick up for Big Hat. I picked up for Mito. He was the one that started it,
Oh,
and
okay.
I got to be friends with him at the rodeos. And I had a pretty good buckskin horse, and he kind of liked him. And he says, "You know, you want a job picking up?" I said, "Yeah, I know this horse will do it." And so he gave me the job, and went on from there. And I worked for quite a few different rodeo companies, and mostly Ladding. I was with Ladding Rodeo Company for over 30 years picking up.
Yeah, and talk a little bit about Ladding Rodeo and some of your experiences there, Randy.
Oh, we went to, he had a lot of rodeos, and Thurl was really a great guy, and he knew how to promote, and he knew how to talk to people, which was the main thing. And he just put on some decent rodeos and went all over doing them.
Yeah, and you were the main pickup, you were one of the main pickup men for him throughout the
Right.
rodeo season for 30
Oh yeah.
years.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for more, maybe 38 years, I think.
38 years. Okay,
Yeah, I think
excellent.
so.
And how many shows a year would you be doing? Do you know?
Oh gosh, I don't remember. Maybe 15 or 20.
15 or 20.
Rodeo, most of them were two performances, and you know, it used to be rodeo was three performances, and they got cut them back to two now.
Okay. And you're going somewhere just about every weekend back then.
Every weekend we was off somewhere.
Yeah.
If I wasn't working for Ladding, I was going off in the bronc riding and the bulldog and somewhere else.
Oh, you were
My
still competing. Okay.
oh yeah,
Okay.
still competing. Yeah,
Okay.
yeah, yeah.
And when you were picking up, you would compete as well for Mito and for Lanning?
Right.
Okay.
Right. It's kind of funny when I was in the bronc riding and I was picking up too, and my wife Marilee would pick up while I was in the bronc ride.
Your wife would. And she would pick up.
Yeah, she got on my horse and picked up, and she picked up the one before and the one after, you know, and then me in the middle.
Okay. You know, I've seen some young ladies that are being featured these days as pickup riders, but my goodness, what year would this have been that Marilee would have been picking up for you?
Oh, 1970, probably.
I think that's a very, very important part of rodeo history. This is pretty cool. And you picked up for Mito, you picked up for Ladding, and you talked about picking up for Steve Gander in the World's Toughest Rodeo.
Right.
How did you find your way there?
Well, Steve Gander and Thurl Ladding were putting on rodeos together, and it just went on from there. Thurl was applying the stock for Steve, and, you know, of course, I got the job picking up, you know. And so we just hooked up with Steve, and he put on a lot of good rodeos.
Yeah.
Madison Square Gardens, Toronto, Canada. I mean, we went on a run one time. We went to Washington, D.C., Niagara Falls, Atlanta, Georgia, ended up in Fort Worth at the end. We were gone about 30 days. Steve put on really great rodeos.
Yeah, yeah. And what do you remember about the Madison Square Gardens rodeo? What year would this have been, Randy?
Oh, I'm not quite sure. Maybe in the 80s, 1980.
Mm-hmm. Any Madison Square rodeo stories stand out for you?
Yeah. My wife had the sheepdog and monkey act, and we had to drive the sheep up to the fifth floor and with the dogs, and then the sheep ended up running in the dressing room. Scared the heck out of these basketball players. Sheep running through there. It was kind of funny.
And Marilee had an act for our listeners. She had a number of acts, actually. And
right.
Talk a little bit about the sheepdog and the sheep and what that act was about.
Oh, she had the two capuchin monkeys. Sisko and Ponso were Bill's world's smallest cowboys. And they rode two border collies, and they herded sheep through different obstacles. And she did that for about 20 years because it really went over big. And, you know, it was just really a nice act to watch, you know.
You bet. You bet. And I heard tell of a story where they came and inspected and asked you guys questions about how these monkeys were being taken care of.
Yeah, we were at Madison Square Gardens, I think it was. And somebody called the Humane Society and said the monkeys were screaming. Well, the monkeys, all the monkeys scream. And they were making a lot of noise when they were riding. So somebody called the deal. So the Humane officer came to inspect me. And he come walking in there. And my boy was coming down. And he had each monkey in each arm. He's carrying them in and playing with them. And the guy said, well, is this kind of hard on the monkeys? I said, no, not really. I said, if they didn't like it, why would they get dressed and saddle their dog by themselves? He goes, they do that. I said, well, sure. They know their job. He said, that's all I need to know. And he walked away. It was funny.
That is funny. That is funny. And then she had a Liberty horse act, I believe.
Yeah, she had a bunch of a trick horse act. Candy Kisses would jump through fire. And she had high school horses and different kind of trick horses, and Liberty horses. And then she Roman rode too.
Okay.
So she did quite a bit at the rodeo.
You bet. So when you guys got there, now, were you still competing when you were doing stuff with Steve Gander?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Still riding bronc, still steer wrestling.
Yeah.
Okay. You talked about picking up at the International Finals Rodeo. Per the records,
right.
I see you first picked up at IFR 3 in 1973. Would that be about right?
Yeah, I believe so. I believe so.
Okay. What do you remember? It looks like Randy Calzavera, you and Sammy Andrews were the pickup men. What do you remember about that first IFR?
Well, I remember I was a little nervous about it, because all the top cowboys are there, and they're the ones who vote you in to be the pickup man, so you didn't want to let them down. And but I had a good set of horses and didn't have any problems at all. And they voted me in 7 times. And well, last time I did it, that I didn't even put in for it, and they just wrote my name in it, so
They wrote your name in
I
it.
had to go.
And
It was a lot of fun,
would that have been 1990, your last show?
1990 was the last one, yeah.
Okay. And like you say, you picked up a bunch of times there. Talk a little bit about your pickup horses. You said you had a good team. What do you remember about the team you had in 1973?
Oh, I had a brown horse called Sid and a black horse called Brown, and then I had a bay mare, and I had about five pickup horses, and every one of them would really work good. I mean, I had a deal where if a horse let me down twice, he didn't get a third shot.
Okay.
I mean,
Okay.
I made sure they worked good, and I didn't let them make a mistake. I mean, if they made a mistake, I had to get another one.
And
But they ended up with about six horses that were really, really good horses.
okay, and how many would you haul at a time typically for a weekend?
Three or four.
Okay.
Three or
Okay.
four.
And so with your wife Marilee hauling her axe, you must have had a pretty good sized rig.
Yeah, we had a big trailer with a living apartment, hauled six horses. Of course, we had to haul the monkeys and the sheeps and the dogs too. So it was pretty loaded.
Yeah, lots of going.
Yeah.
And back to the pickup horses, you said if they let you down or made a mistake, what could a mistake look like on a given weekend?
Well, if they didn't want to run, if they cut out, you go to pick somebody up and they shy away or something, or you don't want that. You want a horse that'll go in there and stay. And if the horses started cheating you like that, well, then I couldn't put up with them,
You bet. You bet.
I ended up that's why I ended up with some just good horses.
Okay. And did you train your own horses, Randy?
Yeah, I trained them all. Yeah, I did. We trained all our own trick horses, all our own pickup horses.
And doing all this training, doing all this traveling, and all the time it takes to get ready to go down the road, I mean, just on a given weekend before you even leave the house,
Oh, yeah.
and you're showing, or I'm sorry, you're shoeing horses at this time also.
Right, all week long, Sean.
How did you balance it all? I mean, crazy times.
Well, I was young then. And you could do it, you craved it.
Yeah.
Looked forward to it.
Okay. And as you went on through the, I see that you picked up at IFR 11, which was being 1981, and you went on a 4-year run, 81, 82, 83, 84. What do you remember about maybe the competitors or the buildings? Anything about those rodeos in the early 80s?
Well, it started out in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and they weren't getting the crowds there, and then they ended up going to Oklahoma City, which they did a lot better.
And some of the cowboys that maybe you can that you were picking up that at that time, any stand
Oh,
out
yeah.
for you?
Dan Daly and Ronnie Williams, and there were two who really stand out.
Okay.
Dan Daly, he was a great cowboy, so was Ronnie Williams. I
And
talked to Dan about once a week and Ronnie too.
oh,
So
nice.
we stayed pretty good in touch pretty much.
You bet, you bet. And that's one of the things that we see a lot, Randy. You know, great runs, great rides. We talk about that, great memories that way. But the relationships that get created,
Right.
the situations that we find ourselves in, maybe it's a wreck or whatever, that really helps to strengthen those relationships.
Yeah.
And that's neat that you
Another guy
guys.
I should mention was Tom Orr, the mountain man.
Sure.
We used to rodeo with him, and he was a pretty good bronc rider.
You bet. He come out of the Midwest, right?
He came out of Illinois, and he went out there to Montana got that television show, Mountain Man, done really good at it.
You done really well.
I talk to him every once in a while.
That's cool. That's
He's
cool.
still the same guy.
You bet. And Marlon Harris, I think you talk to him every so
Oh,
often.
Marlon. What a great guy, yeah. Picked him up a million times. We once took a ship to Puerto Rico to do a 30-day tour in San Juan. We spent 30 days in, or 2 weeks in San Juan and 2 weeks in Mayagüez, the other side of the island. And we rodeoed every day for 30 days. Andy Camp from New York set it up. And it was interesting, it was different. Took 4 days to get there on the boat. Had the horses on the boat and the dogs and the monkeys, and merrily flew over there with the crew. And I stayed with the ship and got over there. And one thing is really funny about the second day I was on there, I heard sirens blowing, and I walked out on the deck. And this was a big ship. I mean, all like 400 containers. And there's two lifeboats, and they were both going down to the water and had all the crew members in it. And I thought, oh boy. I leaned over and I'm hollering at these guys. Hey, you forgot me. And they're laughing like heck. Well, they hit the water and come back up, and they're all laughing. They said, oh, don't worry, it's just a drill. We do it every other day. I thought, oh man, I'm going down with the ship, you know?
Yeah.
That
Could have cued you
was
in,
pretty
couldn't they?
funny.
They could have included you in that little
Yeah,
before.
you think
Yeah,
it said,
yeah,
let me know, you know?
yeah.
It was kind of neat story,
That is cool. That is cool.
but.
So Andy Camp out of New York
Right.
puts on this rodeo for 30 days in Puerto Rico. What was there a sanctioning body? How do you remember how that all got started?
Well, Andy did a lot of rodeos out east, and he had the Double R Rodeo Company, and I don't know how he got into that deal, but you know, it wasn't sanctioned. It was just open rodeo, and what it was a Wild West show. You know, everybody did the same thing every night. I was a pickup man and had the Bulldog steer every night, and merrily did the acts along with Lenore Rowe, and Bobby Rowe was there. He was a arena director, and Lenore and merrily did all the acts. So
Who was
it was a
your
lot of fun doing that.
announcer? Who are maybe your rodeo officials? Just some names.
Boy, it's been so long ago, I can't remember. I knew the rodeo announcer really well. Matter of fact, I sold him a monkey after we got home. He wanted a monkey when I started his own act, but I can't remember his name. And that was back in 85.
1985. Okay. And how many cowboys, cowgirls went with you?
Oh, there was probably 20 some, and they all would go to the motel at night, get on a bus and go to the motel. And I was the only one that stayed. Marilyn and I and Wade, the only ones that got to stay there. We kind of kept an eye on everything, because we had our truck and trailer and camper there, so that's why we stayed at the rodeo ground.
Oh, you did. Your truck and
Yeah,
trailer?
yeah, yeah.
They put that on the
I,
ship and took that with you.
oh yeah, I drove that 6-horse trailer with a living apartment on the ship, and had all my horses in it and everything we needed, and I was the only one that took a vehicle over there.
Okay. And you were responsible for all the buck and stock, everything while you were there. You're the only one on
Well,
site?
wasn't responsible, but they just asked me, since everybody's leaving, can you keep an eye on
Mm-hmm.
them? Excuse me. I said, yeah, I'll keep an eye on them. Well, I just kind of looked after them, every night.
Yeah. And any close calls? Anything that stands out for
Well,
you?
one night we've got a little kid, that 12-year-old boy that we made good friends with from Puerto Rico, and he couldn't speak English, but he come banging on the door about 2 o'clock in the morning, and he said, the bandits, he said, they're stealing the horses. And I went, oh boy. So I went outside, and sure enough, they got all the bucking horses, and they're going down the road with them. About six or seven bandits, I call them. That's what he called them. And they were chasing these horses down the road, about 20 head of bucking horses.
Oh, wow.
So I jumped on my pickup horse, bareback, and I took off after him. I had a pistol, and I started shooting the pistol in the air and whooping and hollering. All of a sudden, they just scattered and went to the woods.
Okay.
And I got around the horses, and I don't know how I ever did it, but I brought them all back and put them right back in the pen,
All by yourself.
all by myself. And I can't believe they went back, but they did. I got I herded them up and got back in the pen. And the next morning, everybody come on the bus and got off, and I'm going to tell everybody this story. I was there and told everybody, and they looked at me like, yeah, okay, you're a dreamer.
Yeah.
I said, no. I said, ask Merrily, ask Wade. Well, you know, it really happened, but nobody believed it. You know?
Okay. And you go, you
that
go,
was kind of exciting.
That is exciting. 12, thank goodness for the 12-year-old young boy that gave you a hand and said, look out.
Yeah, he was, I don't know, he wanted to go home with us, and we got ready to leave. And he said, I go with you, I go with you. And I, we can't take you, you got a family. No, he said, I got no family.
Oh, wow.
And I really kind of wanted to take him, but that wouldn't have been a very good idea. But he was really a nice kid.
Oh, wow.
Felt this every day, and I often wonder what happened to him.
Yeah, more of the relationships we talk about, right? Any fun stuff or challenging stuff or bad wrecks, picking up or steer wrestling?
I broke my leg in 6 places one time in the bronc riding.
Holy cow, how'd you do that?
That wasn't much fun. Got hung up in the stirrup.
Oh my goodness, so you were hung up for a bit then.
Well, about 2 jumps, but broke it in 6 places and laid up for 6 months with a cast on. That was pretty rough.
Holy cow, did they operate? How'd they, 6 places?
No, they never did. They just put a cast on it and took 6 months to get better.
Oh my goodness. And today, does any injuries bother you, hold you back?
No, no, none whatsoever.
None whatsoever. That is absolutely excellent. Yeah.
And I shot horses for all them years. My back stayed good.
Yeah. And you've retired.
Most guys didn't last that long.
Yeah, for sure. I can see that. And did the horseshoeing keep you in condition that helped rodeo?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you got to be in shape to shoe horses because it's a lot of strenuous hard work on your muscles.
Yeah. What muscles, and I think this first time we've talked to somebody that's a farrier, I see people doing it, man, bending over and so forth. What muscles does it really work?
Well, your legs. Your legs got to be strong, you know, be able to hold them and be able to move with them. And of course, you got to have a good back. If you got a bad back, this is not going to work. But, you know, the most pressure is on your legs.
Okay.
I think.
Okay. And how did you get into shoeing?
Well, I wanted to be a vet or horseshoer, and that veterinarian looked like it was too much schooling for me because I wasn't much on schooling.
Yeah.
So I decided to shoe horses, and I worked for a guy for 6 months, was his apprentice. And then after 6 months, I went on my own and ended up getting a lot of work and went on from there and lasted a long time.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you said, was it 38 years you shoed?
3 years for shoeing.
53 years. My
God. Yeah, that's a long time.
That is a long, long time. And did you mostly do pleasure horses, rodeo horse, competitive horses?
I did everything. I did quarter horses, show horses, saddlebreds. I was into saddlebreds for a while.
Oh, wow.
With the big feet, you know. And,
yeah.
You know, and just whatever horse was, I'd shoe it, you know.
So you're competing and you're horseshoeing. Didn't that go through your mind, man, if I get hurt here or there, and I know you did get hurt, did you think about that?
No, I didn't want to think about it. You know, I mean, in the back of my mind, I knew you could get hurt rodeoing.
Yeah.
And then you wouldn't be able to work. But, you know, I love rodeo so much, I just went on with it, you know.
Yeah. And back in high school, 15, you start riding barebacks. Were you in any athletics in school, basketball, anything?
No, I played football for a while. In high school, that was about it.
Okay. And rodeo simply caught your attention.
Yep, I was really like to go to rodeos, like watching them, and I said, "Man, I got to do this." And
yeah,
I ended up doing it.
You ended up doing it, and you did it a long, long time.
I didn't have any help when I started. I had to learn everything myself.
Yeah, I can appreciate that. And, you know, in today's day and age, you know, a lot of rodeo schools out there. Did you ever jump in with a crew like Jack Wiseman or Rob McDonald or some of these other crews running up and down the road?
Well, I jumped in with Tom Orr once in a while. We three, four, five of us to go off rodeo for the week.
And that was typically through the Midwest. How far afield would you get?
Oh, through down through Missouri and maybe Oklahoma and up to Minnesota and Wisconsin. My son Wade ended up traveling with Jack Wiseman before Jack passed away, and he went with him for a couple of years.
Okay. And Wade, you said your son is still competing today.
Right. Yeah. He's 45.
He'll be 45.
Still bulldogging. They were bulldogging last night. We live right next door to them.
Yeah.
They were practicing last night. We went and I watched them.
Yeah. And are you coaching these days? Is there ever an interest to say, let me go try this again?
No interest in trying it again.
Yeah.
But as far as coaching, things have changed so much on how they do everything. You know, and I was old school, and those techniques nowadays don't work, you know.
What were some of the techniques, or what are they doing different today?
Well, just knowing that, and like in the bulldogging, they study the cattle, you know, and they know what the cattle are going to do, and, you know, how fast you can be on one. Same with the bucking horses. They know what the horse is going to do, and, you know, in advance, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And you picked up Formido Calcevera, and
right.
And that's different than Big Hat?
Yeah, well, Mito was the founder of the Bar M Rodeo Company. He started it out mm-hmm. in the 1920s. Mm-hmm. And then when Mito died, his brother Rudy took over the rodeo company, and that became Big Hat Rodeo Company.
Okay, okay.
And that's what went on from there.
Okay. So talk a little bit about Mito Calcevera.
Oh, Mito was really a good guy, but he was pretty rough around the edges. I mean, you know, he did a lot of hollering and screaming, but didn't seem to bother him, but everybody liked him.
And broncs that he had back in those days, any that really stood out for you?
Oh, yeah, he had some broncs that were pretty bad. Like, I remember Coco, Double Ought, was really, really a rank horse. He bucked me off every time I got on him. He had a buckskin horse, Gunsmoke. That was a pretty nice horse. Got on him a lot. Mm-hmm. It's a funny deal. Mito, when he first started rodeo, and he bought, remember, the Rodeo Cowboy Association was called Rodeo Turtle Association.
Yeah.
Well, they had turtle saddles,
yeah.
Bronc saddles. Well, Mito bought one in the 1920s, and I've got that saddle today sitting in my living room.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You never rode Mito, in it.
I rode broncs in it, yeah.
You did.
When I was a teenager, yeah.
Okay.
I won bronc riding it, and I was kind of partial. The thing about it still has a horn on it. Every bronc saddle doesn't have a horn. Well, this one, they kept the horn on it. It's been on a jillion horses.
Oh, my
goodness. You know, because Mito used it for years and years with the rodeos. He said to me one day, he said, you want to buy that saddle? I said, sure. He said, I gave $75 for it. I'll take my money back. Like 50 years later.
Oh, my goodness.
I said, you got it.
Okay, okay.
So I got it sitting around. I'm looking at it right now.
Okay.
You know, old turtle saddle.
And what kind of stirrups does it have on?
Got the wooden oxbow stirrups on it.
It does, it does. And were they riding with binds back then?
No, there was no binds on it back then. None whatsoever. Just straight stirrups hung straight down.
And so what made it an official turtle saddle?
Just because the association sponsored it, I guess, you know.
Okay. But much different seat-wise or cannel or swells, much different?
Well, yeah. They didn't have, like nowadays, you can get 17, 18-inch seats. They were all like 15, 16 on these turtle saddles.
So this would have been in the 70s, early 70s. You right. got on a bronc in that saddle, or several broncs in that saddle. So how did you do the spurring motion, and how did you stay on without the binds, which pin you when your feet come back, into the swells?
Well, it's really hard to explain, but there was a lot of guys before me that rode that saddle, and won a lot of money in it without any binds, you know. You know, the first time I entered a saddle bronc, and Neil brought the saddle to me, and he said, here. I said, it's got a horn on it. I said, I don't want to ride that. He goes, don't worry about it. He said, then I'm more buck than horse than you'll ever get on.
Yeah, yeah.
So I ended up riding it in the bronc riding it with three go-arounds, and I wound up winning the bronc riding.
Oh, my goodness. And how many years did you ride on that bronc saddle?
I changed after a while, and when you could see things were changing and if people were going to different saddles, different styles, you know.
Yeah.
And that's it's when... kind of outdated and with no binds in it, you didn't want to ride anymore. Started riding a good saddle with a bind.
Yeah. And so moving, and we've talked a lot about like the soft-handled riggins and moving to the hard handles and to what they've evolved today. So what was the difference when you got on to a saddle, and I'm assuming you moved to a saddle that fits you, so your seat size, and a little bit bigger swells possibly?
No, I think the swells were all about the same.
Were they? And then, but you had binds.
Yeah, I had binds in the saddle. Saddle would sit up in front a little more than the old turtle saddles, you know, and they kind of sit level. Well, these bronc saddles nowadays kind of set up at an angle, you know.
And how did the binds, and this is interesting, Randy, I've not spoken with anybody that's moved through the generations of saddles like you have, and you're very fortunate to have ridden it. What was that experience like the first time you get on a saddle and it's got binds?
Well, it felt kind of funny, you know, and you had to get the binds just right, had to get them adjusted. Just right, you know, so it can kind of lock in when you kick back and snap you back to the front end. But back then, I didn't have binds. I don't know how we did it without binds. It just you didn't spur them like they do nowadays. You
right.
know?
So you weren't getting, I mean, at that time, everybody's riding the same kind of a saddle. So you're just not getting as far forward, but your legs are. Yeah,
they weren't getting up to the neck. They were getting to the flats of the shoulders and kicking back because you couldn't because, you know, there was no binds to keep your feet forward. Everything changed. I mean, they come out with all these new saddles and new gimmicks. And
yeah. Have you seen these new saddles these days?
Oh, yeah.
Sit a lot further forward, and the swells are a lot taller and a lot deeper, right. A lot more angle to them. And
I see one thing they do, they move the D-ring back to the middle of the seat on a lot of saddles, where the D-ring used to pull from this right onto the swells.
Yeah.
Well, they've moved this D-ring back so your saddle sits way far forward on a horse, so it's a little easier to get to the front end.
Yeah, not only to the front end, but also higher into the neck, right? I mean, and I know it's all changing, and I know it doesn't match up to what you came up through, even when you got into the saddles, you know, that had the binds, and you've been through a lot of generations of it. But my goodness, could you ride the caliber of bronc that's out there today and do that in the older generation saddles?
No, that would never happen. If you try to ride without binds nowadays on some of these great horses, I don't care who you are.
Yeah.
I don't think it would work.
I think the saddles have evolved to keep up with how the horses and the broncs have gotten so great.
Well, it's just like the bareback rigging. First rigging I bought was a Hereford rigging, and it had a leather handle that it would move from side to side. You know, there was no rawhide in it. It would go, you can move it 2 inches either way.
Yeah.
And then they kept changing, went to the hard handles. And now these bareback riggins are up past guy's belly button, you know?
Yeah,
they're so high, I can't believe it.
Yeah, sit very, very tall.
You know, the old riggins were down on a horse's back. These new riggins are 6-8 inches off their back.
Yeah. And the binds these guys are riding with, you didn't have a bind. Yeah. You didn't have your hand wedged in, locked in on a soft-handled rigging.
No, they used to take a white tape and put it on the handle upside down so the sticky part. And then you stuck your hand in on that tape. And that was a bind you had.
And all on grip at that point.
Right, all grip, grip and balance,
And balance, and you had to use your feet, right, to keep pulling you
Oh,
forward.
yeah. Yeah, you had to do something because them rigging moves around a lot.
You bet.
And of
And
course.
did you transition then to hard handled rigging when those start coming out?
I tried it. I didn't like it,
Didn't
so.
like it. Okay.
I didn't like it, so I just went on this bronc riding and
Yeah.
bulldogging.
And picking up when they transitioned, you were picking up already then when they transitioned from soft to hard handles, and the bind really, really, really started to come in. What effect did you see happening? Were there more wrecks?
Well, I didn't like it too good because it was hard on the horses, They could never get their hands out. And you go around arena once or twice, and that when you should be getting off the horse, they're trying to get their hands out. It makes it hard on the bucking horses, makes it hard on the pickup horses, And used to be back in the old day of Johnny Clark day, J.O. Cravens, you'd ride up there. As soon as you got there, they'd get off. You wouldn't have to go around and around and around while they're trying to work their hands out. So, it wasn't much fun for a pickup man. I notice nowadays they go around the arena quite a few times while they're trying to get their hand out. It never used to be that way. They could just pull their hand right out years ago.
And with all the running and everything they're doing today, you talk about hauling 4 or 5 horses, you would have to rotate in today's world, and maybe you did this when you were picking up. You'd rotate through an event, through the bareback riding, go get a different horse.
Right, I'd change about it. Like when I worked the finals, they'd buck 15 horses. Well, I'd use three different horses.
Oh wow,
I'd
through.
buck like five.
So you would, through 15 barebacks, how many times would you swap out in a go round?
Well, it depends on how my horse felt, but two for sure. Sometimes three, but.
And when you started picking up IFR number 3, 1973, there were p three pickup men. You,
Right.
Randy Calzavera, Sammy Andrews. How was that different? Because I'm assuming before that it was typically just two of you picking up.
Right.
So how did that change?
Oh, I never liked the three pickup man deal. I liked the two pickup man because you knew where the other guy was all the time and he knew where you were at. And it just worked out so much better. But I see like a lot of them are four or six pickup men out there.
We
Like
watched
at
Cheyenne.
Cheyenne and stuff
You
like that.
bet. You bet.
Well, they got to do that because they buck so many of them and their arena's so big, Well, you got to have extra horses, give them a break,
You bet. You bet. So what were you looking for in a pickup horse? What was your ideal pickup horse, and did you have one?
Well, everybody talked about they got to be big and stout. Well, that never bothered me. I liked a little horse. As good as a big horse, as long as he had the heart, he had to have a horse with a lot of run. He had to run off your hand. You didn't want one you had to keep spurring or kicking or to get going. One all my horses to leave off my hand and run. You had to have that. I mean, if you go to pushing a horse and trying to get him get there, that's not much fun, but I look for a horse with a lot of run, a lot of handle, and good stop on him.
And
Hard
what,
to find one.
yeah, how do you train a horse to run into the places you're trying to send him into a bucking horse with a guy moving his feet?
Well, you just gotta try it. Some horses, I've tried some horses, you couldn't get them anywhere near a bucking horse. And then some horses kind of liked it, But I found out when you start a pickup horse, if you start them saddle broncs, you'd ride in there and you'd dally the saddle bronc. Well, he'd have to stay next to the bucking horse. And the horse would learn that, hey, this ain't so bad, And when they go into a bareback horse, you can't really stay there that long.
You bet. You
But
bet.
when you hook a saddle bronc up, you're there and your horse feels more comfortable. That's how I always start them in the bronc riding.
And when you had two pickup men, and this is, back going down just weekends, every weekend, you have two of you guys picking up. you had assigned duties. Was one of you going to ride in and you know, in the bronc riding, pick up the bronc rein, dally off like you talked? Was somebody going to, the other one going to ride in and maybe the flank strap, trip the flank strap? What was kind of your duties? Were there assigned duties?
No, you never knew. You didn't say, well, I'll do the picking up and you do the hay. You just played it by ear. And depending on where the bucking horse was at the time, whistle blows. Maybe I wasn't in that position and the other guy was. Well, then, you know, we didn't try to, well, I'm going to do all this. You know, if you're there, you go for it.
Yeah.
If I'm there, I'll go for it.
Okay.
You just get behind and help me, and you get the plank, and, you know, you start assigning duties that don't work very good. You just got to go with what's happening.
You bet. And I got to imagine, you know, a team of you over time, it just becomes natural, you and the other pickup man?
Oh, yeah. I picked up with Mickey Sekula for 30-some years, and I knew where he was at all the time. He knew where I was at. You know, we never had to discuss anything. And, you know, I knew when to let him go, and he knew when to let me go.
Yeah. And working with a teammate and wrecks are going to happen. Hang-ups, whatever it might be. You got anything come to mind there? Somebody gets hung up goes off on the wrong side, you know, right-handed rider, and he goes off on the left-hand side, and he hangs up on a bronc.
Yeah, I was good about that. I carried a 6-foot rope on my saddle horn. I didn't carry a lariat like you do nowadays. When someone was hung up, I'd catch them, put a rope around their neck, and I had the bucking horse right next to me where they can come get his hand out. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, these guys rope them a horse when someone's hung up, and they ended up being lunged around and around and around.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I like the rope around the saddle horn the best. That was my deal.
That's how you kept them close.
Right.
Okay. That's very cool.
Oh, I had a few wrecks along the line, a lot of kicks, you know.
And no protective gear. I mean, you had chaps. Those were a little bit thicker. Were those padded?
Yeah, we had padded chaps and had leg guards. Hmm. And, of course, I had all leg guards and bell boots on my horses so they wouldn't get stepped on.
Yeah, and before the ride, you would receive instruction from whoever's flanking up in the chute for a position where you should hang out. Based on the bucking horse.
Right. They stock or heck, you always look up and motion to you where they want you to be. Tell you ahead of time, you know, make this horse go this way, make him go that way. You know, there was kind of a little sign to us. You know, some bucking horses learn to read a pickup horse too, you know. You get a lot of them to follow you in the circle, and some of them wouldn't pay any attention to you, you know.
Yeah. So you had to know the livestock. You had to know the bucking horses and what would help them perform the best.
Well, if you knew what the horse was going to do,
yeah,
you know, you knew where you had to be. Like when you got to go to the finals, well, there'd be a bunch of different stock contractors and bucking horses you've never seen. So you didn't know what that horse was going to do. So you really had to be on your toes, you know. But like when we worked for, you know, Steve and Gander and Ladding, I knew all the horses and I knew where how to pick them up, you know.
Yeah.
And the horses kind of knew us too, you know.
Yeah. And what are the challenges of, you did a lot of open arena stuff, outside arenas throughout the summers and everything. What was different then when you went into the buildings?
I like the buildings awful good. You know, the crowds seem to be better and, you know, there seemed to be a better atmosphere in the building. You know, when you're outside, you never know it was going to rain or get too hot or.
Yeah. And could you tell a difference? Did some broncs or bulls buck better outdoors than in the indoors?
No, not really. They seem like it's all about the same.
Okay.
Oh, he's talking about arenas. We worked in Toronto, Canada, and it rained so hard there that the arena was over 2 foot in mud. I mean, our horses were standing in mud almost up to their knees.
Oh, wow.
And they still bucked horses, and we had to pick them up. It was pretty rough. They couldn't even load the calves in the chute because the calves were almost under the mud.
Oh, my goodness.
It just rained and rained and rained.
Yeah.
It was the final Canada, the World's Fair.
And that was World's Toughest when you went up there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Steve put that on.
And you said you were out for a few weeks, Madison Square Gardens and on and on, and you ended up at Fort Worth, I believe you said.
All right.
Talk a little bit about that rodeo, and what a road trip.
Yeah, we started out, and we went to Madison Square Gardens, and next weekend was Niagara Falls, and then Washington, D.C., and then somewhere in the Poconos. And Atlanta, Georgia, and then Fort Worth, and then we ended up in Springfield, Illinois, for the last rodeo.
My goodness.
We were gone over a month.
You
know, it was pretty nice, you know. Pretty nice little trip. Got to see a lot of country and got a lot of memories of Larry Mahan. I went to his school, and we ended up being pretty good friends and talked a lot on the phone before he passed away. And he come to the house, Illinois, and stayed with us for a while. And he was really a good guy. Learned a lot from him. Hey, I met him years ago at the Chicago International Amphitheater. They had a stock show and rodeo there for years. And I ended up meeting him down there. And we hit it off pretty good. And so I ended up going to this rodeo school. Like I said, he came to the house and stayed for a while. And we had him. I had him put on one of those clinics, a horse bricking clinics. He came up and did that for me, and spent a weekend doing that. And he was pretty good at that horse training.
Okay.
I can remember years ago when I was a kid, went to Denver to the rodeo, and I think I was 17. Larry was 19. He was sitting on his saddle, working his saddle, and I was sitting on the fence there, and Casey Tibbs walk up and sits next to me, and he points at that Mahan. He says, you know, he said, nobody knows this kid, but he's going to make it someday.
Wow.
And that stuck in my mind. And right after that, that's when Mahan took off and ended up doing as much as he did, you know. But Casey Tibbs knew it, and he pointed it out.
Okay. Was Casey still competing at that time?
No. He was just there.
Okay. And
it was pretty nice to be able to talk to him, you know.
Oh, that's huge. And what did you think of Casey?
Oh, he was a pretty good guy. I didn't have much to do with him. I just talked to him that short time. But, you know, he was really, really friendly. He was a Cowboys cowboy.
Yeah. Yeah, we had an opportunity to go. We were in Pierce, South Dakota a few years ago and had an opportunity to go to the South Dakota Hall of Fame there, the Rodeo Hall of Fame.
And, oh, okay.
Man, yeah. And they had a display on him, and just what an interesting – and he come from that area.
Right.
So just an interesting, interesting person. Yep. Yeah.
Little things like that stick in your mind, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a rodeo great like that comes and talks to you.
Yep.
Just a regular down-to-earth guy?
Yeah. Man, he was a down-to-earth guy. He was – you could call him on the phone, and he just – whatever he was doing, he'd stop doing and talk to you. And, you know he was busy. Larry, when he was down here in Texas, before he passed away, he had over 100 head of horses.
Holy cow. Okay.
And had that many longhorn cattle.
Wow.
And Larry called me up one time. He says, come on down. He said, we'll saddle up and go herd these, round these cattle up. I says, then what? He says, we'll just turn them loose and herd them up again.
We get to be cowboys.
Said, yeah. He said, we'll just play cowboy for a while.
Oh, that is so neat. That is so
neat. He had over 100 head of horses. He was a great horseman.
And
people don't really they think of Larry Mahan as just a rodeo cowboy, but he was a great horseman. He knew how to break horses and how to really do things with them.
And he was into cutting horses too, wasn't he?
He was into cutting horses for a long time and did pretty good, but he told me that He said he got disenchanted with the cutting horses because they were starting them too young, and he said he didn't like that. He said he liked to see a horse grow up before they put that much on him. So he kind of got out of the cutting.
Wow, wow.
And he was pretty good at everything he did. He was good at.
You bet. Oh my goodness. Yes. Yeah. And really was one of the first businessmen of rodeo.
Oh yeah, he was a businessman. Yeah, he started that clothing company and boot company, and you know, been all over the world.
And he treated his competition that way, right? I mean, as a business, right. What I do, what I rodeo, that's my business.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And did you ever have a conversation with him about rodeo mindset or anything like that, Randy?
No, he used to tell you about you should eat, sleep, and drink it, you know. I can remember we'd be at a restaurant eating, and under the table he'd have his toes turned out. And you could see him working his toes, turning out, turning out, turning out. And I said, what are you doing? He said, I eat, sleep, and drink, and my toes turned out. He says, there ain't a time of day that I don't turn my toes out. He said, you got, that's where the money is, you know?
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, he was really, really into that, you know, riding perfect.
That is so cool. I'm glad you were able to meet him, and I'm glad you were able to hang out with him. It sounds like.
Oh, yeah. He was a great guy.
Yeah. And meeting Casey Tibbs. Did you ever meet Jim Shoulders?
Yeah, Jim Shoulders rodeoed with us at the World's Toughest Rodeo. They had him there for the light beer, was a sponsor, and he had his bull there. And he got introduced every rodeo. And he just rode around the arena, and they tribute to Jim Shoulders. You know, he was a pretty decent guy.
Yeah.
Not like Larry Mahan, but.
And a picture that I have on my wall, Tom Woods, took, so it would have been like the early, late 70s, early 80s, and it's a picture of Jim Shoulders at the International Finals Rodeo.
Right.
You know, behind the chutes or whatever. He's got gray hair at that point, but what a great picture. Anything else you can think of, Randy?
Well, should talk about John Wayne's horse, Dollar.
My goodness, yes. Talk about John Wayne's, okay, go ahead.
Well, John Wayne had Dollar that he rode in the last five movies he was in with his own personal horse. Well, after John died, Steve Gander bought Dollar, and he brought him to the rodeos and all the indoor rodeos. And my job was to lead him around under spotlight while John Wayne talked and gave a tribute to him. And that was pretty, pretty emotional, pretty exciting, leading John Wayne's horse around. You know,
wow.
Under spotlight, it was probably one of the highlights of my life.
Wow, that is so cool. And how would you describe Dollar?
Oh, he's a great horse. We were at Madison Square Gardens, and I don't know why I did it, but I took the banner off the back that said John Wayne's horse, and I got on him. I went out there and started picking up on him.
On Dollar.
On Dollar. And oh, he worked so good. He was really nice, really picked up really great. And Steve, he come to me and he says, you know, he said it took quite a guy to do something like that. He says you like that horse that much, you just take him home and you take care of him. He says, because I don't know anybody that would have done that. Went out there and started picking up on a high priced John Wayne horse.
Did you take him home? Did you take him up on
so
it?
Yes, I took him home. I took him home. So he says, take him home and you take care of him.
Oh, my goodness.
He said, so I took him home. We had him all summer long. And I had a lot of fun. I rode him around, and my wife rode him, and my son rode him. And it was kind of cool. You could watch a John Wayne movie and look out the window and see the horse in the lot right outside the window.
So what year would have been early 80s.
Early 80s, yeah.
And how old was Dollar when you got him?
I believe he was about 14 or 15.
That's all. Okay. And what's the backstory on Dollar? Where did he come from?
Well, I don't have any idea. Okay. I don't, you know, he was supplied by one of the cowboys that supply him for the rodeos and or for the movies. And I guess John Wayne took a liking to him and he ended up buying him. And the story I got was his own personal horse. And,
wow.
You know,
how would you describe him? Height, you know, how tall was he? How, what did he weigh? What did he look like?
Oh, he's a big chestnut horse, weighed about, I bet he weighed 1150, 1200, stood 15'2". He was a big horse.
Big horse.
Really nice to be around. I mean, you know, he'd stand there all day long. You know, of course, they had to do that with the movie, stand around a lot. You know, and he just, nothing bothered him. And, you know, he just a real pleasant horse to be around.
And well broke.
Oh, really good broke, you know.
And what was his natural talent, do you think, in the rodeo arena? If you would, you had Dollar, how would you used him? Through competition, any of the events, where would you have used him or recommended he be used?
Well, I would have picked up on him, but I only did it one time, you know.
Yeah.
But if I was going to stick out a horse, he works for good. I picked up a couple of broncs on him, and, man, he was nice. And I thought, man, this is a nice horse.
That's a great story.
Yeah.
That is incredible. Dollar.
Yeah. Not many people would say they picked up broncs on John Wayne's horse.
I would say not. I would say that is really cool. And they did a tribute to Dollar during the openings and such.
Yeah. John Wayne, he had a song he would kind of half sing and about America.
Okay.
And so I'd lead the horse around under spotlight. And at the end of it, I'd take off in a high lope, and the people went crazy. I mean, standing ovations when I'd take off with that horse and fly around the arena with Dollar. And people really, really loved it.
Oh, wow. And he was on that whole tour where you went to D.C. and you went to Niagara Falls and on to.
Oh, yeah. We hauled him all over, went to all the rodeos. The only thing he had to do was just be led around the arena, you know.
And occasionally get picked up on.
Yeah, just one time. One time.
Probably the high point of his career.
And mine too, I'll tell you what. You know, I wasn't sure how it was going to work out, you know. Could have gotten a lot of trouble, but, you know, I thought something I had to do, you know. I said, I have got to ride this horse.
What a great story. My goodness, what a great story.
One time we were in Illinois and a tornado came up and big black clouds swirling. And Marilee was out doing her act and she didn't realize there was a tornado coming. Well, the grandstand started leaving. I had to walk out and say, Marilee, there's nobody here to watch your act. We got to go.
We
got
to go.
So she looked up, we saw that big cloud. Of course, it went around us, luckily. But it was pretty scary for a while, you know.
My goodness. Yeah.
That was about the worst weather deal we ever got into.
That's enough. Yeah. Man, them tornadoes. I just saw that movie Twister.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, that's not for me. I grew up in Iowa. I can remember those kind of storms. My goodness. Head to the basement, right? Head to the basement.
Yeah, and blow you away.
Blow you away. Get in the ditch, right? Isn't that what we were supposed to do? Get in the ditch?
Yeah, get in the ditch or a bathtub or something. I don't know. Never had to do it.
So you traveled. How many kids, Randy?
Just one boy.
And that's Wade. Yeah. Wade's his name. And when did he get involved in the sport? I know he traveled with you. He hauled with you and all that stuff. When did he show interest that I want to do something?
Oh, from day one. I mean, he just, when he was a little kid, a little baby, 2 years old, Marilee would be out in the arena and I'd be out in the arena. We had nowhere to put him. So I'd put him on one of my pickup horses and he'd stand there, sit on the horse while he's tied to the fence. Well, that was his, where he knew how to stay there, you know?
Yeah.
And then we could see him, keep an eye on him. And he just really wanted to rodeo. And he tried riding broncs for a while. He didn't like that. Tried steer wrestling and got really good at it. won a lot of money on steer wrestling.
Did he? Okay. Qualified for the finals?
Oh, yeah. I've been in the finals a bunch of times.
Okay.
Yeah. I had a few wrecks along the at the Slitsmart Liquor Bowl. Remember that?
The Slitsmart Liquor Bowl. Okay.
They had a commercial for Slitsmart Liquor. And they had a big black bull that would jump through a banner for a television commercial. And Steve ended up hiring him for the rodeos, and we set up a banner, and he jumped through it, you know. And he ended up getting my horse and hooking my horse one day, knocked the horse over.
Oh, my gosh, in the arena?
Pretty wild. Yeah, in the arena. Oh. He just came running. I went to rope him. He turned and got under my horse and flipped us in the air.
Holy cow. No injuries to the horse?
No. Everything was fine. Man.
You know, we talk about wrecks in the bareback riding, but you were pushing bulls and you were doing everything like that. So, and that's the thing that always stood out. That's what made me cringe back in the day. A horse, yeah. You know, a horse and a bull getting too close. But flipped you over like you're on the dirt. You hit the dirt.
Oh, yeah. He had his head right under his belly and picked us up in the air and just dropped us.
Oh, my goodness. The crowd went nuts.
Oh, yeah. They thought it was part of the show, I guess.
But you only did that one show. You didn't try to repeat that ever?
No, I kind of stayed back for them and started asking them instead of telling them, you know.
Yeah. Wow. That's another
great another story. Time we're picking up Don Gillespie at a rodeo, and they bucked this stud horse. Well, I went to picked up Don, and this stud horse rears up, puts both front feet over my saddle horn, reaches around and grabs me a hold of my back in his mouth, picks me up and drops me off the side. And I hit the ground.
A bronc did.
Yeah. I mean, picked me in his mouth right up off the horse.
God.
Had a hole in the corner of my back, and holy cow.
Tear you up.
I didn't think you'd ever turn loose. I hit the ground, and boy, I tell you what, that was pretty bad.
Man, stitches?
No stitches, but went to the hospital, and you could see the teeth marks on my back. And
holy cow.
Nurse said, "What happened to you?" I said, "A horse bit me." Well, she said, "Don't go anywhere. I got to show everybody this." So she went and got all the nurses. Come look at this, and you can see his teeth marks top and bottom on my back.
Wow. So above your ribs, around your shoulder blade?
Right in that little fat part around your hip, just above your hip.
Oh, really? That low?
Got a hold of that, and I mean, he did chomp down.
And he just levered you right up and off.
Right.
Oh, my gosh.
I think it was Rob McDonald was right. No, it was Rob.
And
he said, "I'm out of here."
And he was on the horse when the horse came up?
He was on the bucking horse. He just picked me up I just picked him up, and he was on the back of my horse.
He was on the back of the horse when the horse came up on top of you and got in between and lifted you up off the saddle.
Right, exactly. Wow. Word of God, I tell you what, it was a bad wreck.
Yeah.
I could hardly ride home.
Oh, I can just imagine.
Could hardly sit in the truck.
So no ribs, no issue that
no,
way.
No, it's just all skin, but man, did it hurt.
There's a lot of nerves there. There's a lot of softness there. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Pick you up and pull you off just like nothing. What'd you weigh at that point?
200.
Holy smokes.
I mean, he had me in his mouth now.
And did you see that horse go again after that?
Nah, they were just trying him, I guess.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, but wow. And I never did see him again, thank God.
Wow. Yeah. Enough of a wreck to get a horse's front legs up on top of your saddle horn. That's enough of a wreck already there.
Yeah. Some guy walked up to me, some cowboy, and he goes, "Boy," he said, "you were screaming like a baby out there." I pulled my shirt up and I said, "What do you think?" He goes, "Oh,
man.
I guess you got that one."
Black and blue.
Oh, but terrible.
Terrible. Wow. Lots of ice at that point.
Yeah, yeah.
Man.
But everything heals, you know.
Yeah, yeah. You didn't take much time off for that one?
No, not really. Just kind of bandaged up and went on.
But to your point, lots of hours in the truck headed home, and that's
oh, yeah.
Man,
it was pretty rough.
I can just imagine.
Had wife had diapers, putting diapers on it because it was bleeding bad.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Well, I said dollar would be hard to top. I think you just smoked that one.
Yeah.
This is incredible. What other ones come to mind? We're sitting around. We're just sharing stories. What other one comes to mind?
Well, not rodeo related, but my wife Marilee got hooked by a yak bull one day. Hurt her pretty bad.
A yak bull?
A yak bull, yeah. She walked in the pen with him, which she shouldn't have done. And he took her and got her down and mauled her around pretty good. And it was the middle of winter, and Wade and I were in the house. We said, well, where's your mom? I said, it's below zero out there. So we walked out. She was laying there. And blood ran out of her head, and Wade picked her up, and of course the bull was still there, and he was wanting to fight some more, and we got her out of there and got her to the ambulance, took her to the hospital, and she had took 6 stitches in her head and punctured her lung and broke her clavicle and broke ribs, and she was in intensive care for 3 weeks. It was a pretty bad deal.
Holy cow. How did you come to have a yak bull at the house?
Oh, my son, he's an exotic animal. Man, he's got everything you want to talk about over there. If you name it, he's got it.
Wow. Wow.
He had just bought this yak bull and dropped him off at the house for a while on the way back.
And any lingering effects for Marilee from that?
No, she got over that pretty good, you know.
Okay. Man, but to get hooked and get down, I mean, she was in the pen.
Yeah, I mean, he put his horn between her legs, you know, and they go back and forth. Well, she had edemas on her legs from her knees up to her crotch, just big red deal where you could see where he was just rooting her with his horns, you know.
Oh, my goodness.
Of course, she was knocked out. She didn't know what was going on.
Really? She got hit, so hit her in the head with the horn?
Yeah, I would imagine. Well, she hit the concrete, I think.
It's concrete.
Within the concrete.
Does she have any memories from it?
No, she don't remember a thing.
Doesn't remember going in the pen or why she went in the pen or anything?
No, she had to go through it to feed.
Okay.
She didn't know the bull was in there. And, but my son picked him up, picked her up, and threw him over his eye. And I said, is she all right? And he goes, hell no, she ain't all right.
Yeah.
I mean, she was limp as a rag. We thought she was dead, you know. We got her out of there.
Wow.
We got an ambulance right away and took her to the hospital.
Wow.
A pretty scary time.
That certainly is. My goodness, that certainly is.
Mm-hmm. Other than that, she stayed pretty healthy. She didn't get hurt much.
Good. Good. Wow. That's a big story.
No, that met a lot of people in my life. You know, a lot of different. Had dinner with Festus one time from
Festus,
Gunsmoke.
Of Gunsmoke. You had dinner with Festus.
Yep, at the Skog International. He was sitting there having dinner, and I walked on by, and he said, hey, cowboy, come and sit with me. Have dinner with me. So I sat down and talked to him. He was a really good guy. Festus. That kind of stuck in my memory quite a bit.
Boy, I'll say, you rubbed elbows with a lot of famous folks and a lot of famous horses.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And what stood out for you in that conversation with Festus? What was he eating?
Well, it's just that he was different then than was in when he was playing the role. You know, he's just an average guy. Talk just like you and I talk, you know. Mm-hmm. He just wasn't like the same person, you know.
Yeah.
He played the role and he played it really good, you know.
Yeah. And why was he at the rodeo?
They did a segment on him. He rode a mule and he rode it around and he gave a long speech about Gunsmoke and everything else.
Oh, he did. Okay.
Yeah, during every performance of the rodeo.
I'll be darned. Isn't that something? Wow. So what other famous stars?
Oh, a horse from Bonanza.
Okay.
he was at a rodeo one time, and I got to talking to him, and I was in the bronc riding and went to get on my horse, and he come and got in the back of his youth, helped me saddle my horse. And bronc runner is over, and he come over the trailer, and we sat and talked, and he is really a good guy to talk to too.
Now, who is this?
Horse from Bonanza.
Oh, the big guy.
Yeah, Dan Blocker.
Dan Blocker. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what was he doing there?
Him and Lauren Green did a little skit about their show, and him and I ended up talking, and he was a pretty good guy to talk to.
You rubbed elbows with a lot of famous folks, bud.
Yeah. A lot of good memories. A
lot of good memories. Great memories. And thank you for sharing them. Thank you.
Yeah.
Anything else you can think of? And there's two things that usually happen when the episode comes out. And this won't come out for a few weeks. The people complain they don't like how they sound. Okay, well, And the other is, I wish I'd remembered this or remembered that. And typically as you go through this, it starts to spark those memories. And that's
right.
That's really the whole reason we do the show, is to share the memories. And I see a lot of posts of people going, oh yeah, I remember when I was there, or I was at that rodeo when Randy got picked up off his horse, or whatever it might have been. So if you come up with a story and said, oh, I should have told you this, give me a call. So some quick fire questions here, Randy. How do you take your coffee?
Cream and sugar.
Cream and sugar. Okay. And what belt buckle are you wearing these days?
A belt buckle I won in the steer wrestling in 1975.
1975. And why that belt buckle?
It's the only one I ever won.
Oh, okay. Okay. Good answer. And what brand of cowboy hat do you prefer?
Oh, I like the American pretty good.
Okay. Felt or straw?
Oh, I wear both, you know.
Yeah. And the Resist All, you were going to say?
Yeah. I like Resist All pretty good.
Okay. And if you were starting a rodeo podcast, what would you call it?
What would I call it?
Yeah. What would be the name of the show?
Rodeo 101, I guess.
And who would be your first guest on that
my
podcast?
First guest.
Yeah.
Probably be my son.
Okay.
Because he knows all about our life and his life. And
Excellent.
He shared everything we've done. He shared it, you know.
You bet. Yeah, that's pretty cool that a family could travel together and having horses that you can put a youngster on and, hey, stay put, right? Kind of babysitters, right?
He was 3 years old. He was working, running the calves and steers out at rodeos.
Yeah.
That's pretty young.
You bet. That is very young. But
rode my big buckskin horse, and that horse really took care of him.
So we've covered a lot of ground here, Randy. What advice or what... what memory do you want to end our show with here today?
Oh, probably my memories of John Wayne's horse really sticks out. You know, being able to work a lot of the good rodeos like Madison Square Gardens and, you know, getting to meet a lot of good people and staying in touch with a lot of them really means a lot, you know.
We hope that you enjoyed this episode of our podcast with Randy Steffen. He was a 7-time pickup man for the International Finals Rodeo. He worked with a lot of really, really great rodeo companies, Mito Casavera and Ladding Rodeo, and of course, Steve Gander and the World's Toughest, and also a bareback bronc rider, saddle bronc rider, steer wrestler. And if you do like this episode, please share it with your friends. Word of mouth is always the best advertising. To make your listening easier, you can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Search for Beyond the Chutes and follow us, like us, rate us, give us comments, let us hear from you. If you like reels, we got reels. And no doubt we're going to have a bunch of reels that we're going to be releasing with pictures from our conversation with Randy. So check out our Beyond the Chutes Facebook page and click follow. And we want to say thank you to Parasite System for their support with our podcast. Parasite System is a push-button parasitic diagnostic system that your veterinary clinics are using to test for parasites in your pasture animals, horses, cattle, goats, sheep, and chickens, and now for your companion animals, your dogs and your cats. And we say keep your rodeo horses in top condition. Remember, the miles that you are driving, they are riding, every one of them. You can find Parasite Systems at parasitesystems.com, and that is parasite as in S-I-G-H-T. And we've got a coupon code, BTC023, for 50% off your mail-in testing. I listen to a lot of podcasts about a lot of subjects. I listen to rodeo and racing and some other things. And I want to encourage you to listen to the Rodeo Roots podcast. Rob and Dan Agan and Blue Jeans are recording some great rodeo interviews, and you can find them on all the major streaming platforms. I want to say a big thank you to the IRA Project Facebook group for all their help and guidance. Thank you to Tim Sparks and Marlon Harris. They've really helped us connect with the rodeo greats of the IPRA, like Randy Steffen. And this is Beyond the Chutes with
Randy Steffen.
Until next time, this is Doug Simcox. Thank you for listening.